searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger!
My name, Osai Man.
Are you fresh? What? I can slaughter that car in that car of that crack-a-lottle!
What a maroon! What an ignoramus!
Thank God it's Friday!
Oh, thank God it's Friday. Hello and welcome into the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. I'm Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity, and I hope you are as happy as I am that we have hit the weekend. A lot of things to get done around our place, and I hope it's the same for you, that you're going to unplug, disconnect, and separate yourself from the lunacy that is the news media in America today. And today, we're going to take a look at news. We're going to take a look at how it and history relate to each other. We're going to take a look at a handful of articles that show you just how wrong the mainstream press gets things. And yet they never come back and say, by the way, we messed that up. We'll have a look at that coming up today on this edition of The Daily Perspective. First, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you being there regardless of where that may be or when that may be. If you are, let's say if you were on Facebook Live this morning, I'm looking at folks on Facebook Live. Hi, folks. Good to see you there. If you're on the podcast, wherever you may be or whenever you're listening, thanks a lot. I really do appreciate it. You could be in California. You could be in Hawaii. You could be in Texas. You could be in Oklahoma, any number of places. I don't care where you are. I just care that you're with me. Thank you very much for being there. You are important, and I'm glad you're there. And I appreciate you sharing the podcast with your friends. Let's make the family bigger. Come on. All right. Well, today I've got a stack of stories. Let me pull my stack up here so I can dig through things. I'm not sure if we'll get to everything today, but we're going to try to, as usual. Liberals are angry at Joe Biden. We'll find out why, hopefully. Creepy Uncle Joe is getting his he's getting his information from some really weird sources. And there's something he wants to do that I think we need to talk about. Hopefully we'll get to that. I've got one story, I've got a handful of stories that the press is getting wrong here, and we'll look at those as well. Plus, what's happened in Memphis. You probably are already familiar with the story. We'll break that apart coming up in just a little while. And we'll also look at how the New York Times has failed journalism 101. You know, you can't trust it. President Trump calls it the failed New York Times. And we'll take a look at that coming up in just a moment. But first, Dinesh D'Souza was speaking to a crowd not long ago, and he talked about the origins of fake news. And I thought it was very interesting. I think it's important to hear what he has to say. It's about 3.5 minutes long, and it goes like this.
Here's my incendiary fact. In 1860, which is the year before the Civil War, no Republican owned a slave. Now notice I'm not saying that no Republican leader owned a slave. I'm saying that no Republican in the United States owned a slave. And if that's true, it means that all the slaves in the country, there were 4 million at the time, this was the zenith of American slavery, 4 million slaves were all owned by Democrats. Now, this is the kind of statement that kind of reminds me, if you will, of an atheist who was reading through the Bible. He read it from the beginning to the end, and at the end he made a small note in the margin. He wrote, important if true. Important if true. That's applicable to my statement, important if true. But the beauty of my statement is it's, in a scientific sense, refutable. All you have to do is give me the name of one solitary Republican who owned a slave, and I would have to take it back. And yet to this day, 2.5 years after I made this assertion for the first time, and despite innumerable and tireless effort, Media Matters, you can only imagine all these people doing their very best to ferret out a single counterexample, have not been able to do it. About 6 months ago, a fellow at the University of Michigan wrote me and he goes, Dinesh, I gotcha. Ulysses S. Grant inherited a slave, a single slave, but nevertheless a slave, on his wife's side. And I said, man, that is what I called an almost touche. You almost had me, but I got to point out to you that at the time this happened, Ulysses S. Grant was a Democrat. He became a Republican later. Now, why is all this important? It's important because fake news sits on top of fake history. Fake narratives about America. Attempts to con us and intimidate us and put us up against the wall. Part of our liberation is not just the ability to read between the lines, to figure out when you're being conned, but also to be able to deconstruct these fake narratives. And so as you arm yourself and equip yourself with knowledge, you become what I call a very dangerous American. You'll notice that the other side is a little bit, whenever you start speaking, they get extremely nervous and agitated because they know that everything they're going to say, you already know. But what you're going to say, they have no idea. And they have no comeback. So they're completely disarmed. It's actually a kind of an exciting notion because it makes you a powerful figure in the American debate. It arms you with truth and with knowledge, and you're the one who actually knows what you're talking about. Martin Luther King has a beautiful line which is always inspiring. It's not a line about the content of our character. He says, ultimately, every man must write with his own hand the charter of his Emancipation Proclamation. And I think what he means by this is that in a society of equal rights under the law, we have the right to be treated equally by the government. We have that right. But we don't have any more rights than this. And what we do with our freedom and what we make of our liberty and what we make of our lives, this ultimately is up to us.
Hmm. It's a powerful statement, and he's absolutely right. Fake news is built upon the foundation of fake history. We have fake history because the progressive movement began rewriting history in the textbooks in the late 1890s. In the late 1890s, people who disagreed with the path that America had taken decided to focus on the wrongdoings rather than on the success of everything positive that came from this experiment we call the United States of America and self-governance. They're like that person you know who always sees the possible things that can go wrong. They're the people who specialize in picking things apart. And if you have a committee formed primarily of these people, the job you're working on never gets done. This is the kind of people we're talking about in the progressive movement who changed our education system beginning back in the late 1890s. When they started rewriting the history books, that bred more people who believed the negative rather than focusing on the positive. We have not been a perfect country. There have been things done for which we should be ashamed. And if you look at the history accurately, you will find that many of those things, Japanese internment, the push westward, things like that, the way that we've dealt with Native Americans, things that have happened, the defense of slavery, as he was talking about, have all come from Democrats. So we need to look at history accurately in order to understand what is inaccurate about the news today. And that's very, very important. We have to also understand their methodology. We have to understand how they ignore the basic rules of journalism as well. And that is part of an article that comes to us from the Daily Wire, written by Joseph Curl. And let me dive into that real quick. President Trump rails against fake news, but just what is this so-called fake news exactly? Let's take an in-depth look at one piece that, in my opinion, perfectly exemplifies fake news. Trump needs a target to stay interested in his campaign. For now, it's Biden. That's what the New York Times headline said on Monday. The story was right on the mark. The next day, both Trump and former Vice President Joseph R. Biden lashed out at each other as they both stomped through Iowa, the first state in 2020 to vote on who will inhabit the White House. But it was much of the content that was highly suspect. Anonymous sources, or sometimes no citation of a source at all. Flat-out statements that were biased and steeped in opinion. Mind you, this was not a commentary or analysis piece. It was a news story written by esteemed news reporters Annie Carney and Maggie Haberman that ran on page A16 in the news section of the paper. Quote, late at night, using his old personal cell phone number, President Trump has been calling former advisors who have not heard from him in years, eager to discuss his standing in the polls against the top Democrats in the field, specifically Joseph R. Biden Jr., who he describes in those conversations as too old and not as popular as people think, said the lead. Interesting, but where did that info come from? Who told the reporters what Trump had said? And why did the writers put the president's words in quotes without attributing a source? But the next paragraph was even more interesting. Quote, after being briefed on a devastating 17-state poll conducted by his campaign pollster, Tony Fabrizio, Mr. Trump told aides to deny that this internal polling showed him trailing Mr. Biden in many of the states he needs to win, even though he is also trailing in public polls from key states like Texas, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And when top-line details of the polling leaked, including numbers showing the president lagging in a cluster of critical Rust Belt states, Mr. Trump instructed aides to say publicly that the other data showed him doing well. Well, fascinating, right? But why no source at all for the information, which we'll note quickly spread across the internet? Vox wrote, Trump is reportedly in denial about his campaign's bleak internal polling. Like the Times, Vox also didn't bother with attribution. Quote, during campaign rallies since he's become president, President Donald Trump has repeatedly dismissed polls that reflect poorly on him as somehow representing suppression or not including the 10% of people he thinks support him but refuse to say so publicly. But his denialism about bad polling now reportedly extends to polls conducted by his own campaign. Ah, they slipped in the new standby word, reportedly. Somebody said something, so we're saying the same thing and fobbing it off on the first guys who said it. That's good, right? But I digress. Let's go back to the big Times piece. In recent overarching state of the race briefing in Florida with Brad Parscale, his campaign manager, Mr. Trump was consistently distracted and wanted to discuss other things, according to people familiar with the meeting, said the Times. People familiar with the meeting? What does that mean? In the next paragraph, citing no one, the writers say Trump doesn't speak to aides about what he hopes to accomplish in a second term. Quote, Mr. Trump has griped about traveling too much, but then lashed out at aides, demanding to know, why am I not doing more rallies? He insists on having final approval over the songs on his campaign playlist, as well as the campaign merchandise, but he has never asked to see a budget for 2019. End quote. Again, a direct quote. Who said it? Someone familiar with the things Trump says? No clue. It's just hanging there. Careful readers no doubt wonder, but then the readers of the Times mostly hate Trump, so they'll swallow it hook, line, and sinker. The piece goes on, both with unsourced material and flat-out opinion that lacks any attribution. Quote, but with a limited policy agenda and little interest in governing, Trump has been running for re-election virtually since the day he won. Ouch. That's where journalism is today. And that's why Trump complains about fake news. This is journalism 101, people. As a reporter, say what you want. Just back it up with sources. On the record, if you can. If you can't, tell me why the reputed source knows anything. People familiar with the meeting? That's Bush League, and you know it, New York Times. And so does President Trump. He's right, you know, Joseph Curl is, the author of the story. The New York Times and other trusted news sources don't give you attribution for what they say. They don't give you their sources. They say sources close to and things like that, but they don't tell you where they're really getting their information. And that is Journalism 101. Unless there is some legal reason for not giving the source, you need to explain why you can't give the source and find a way to substantiate it. Otherwise, everything you say is completely untrustworthy. And that's the news media we deal with today. And that's why you have to look at every story through eyes of distrust. You can't trust anything that you see on television or read online or in newspapers or magazines anymore. Because these people are not being honest with you. Saturday, July 20th at Chickasaw Bricktown Ballpark, your Oklahoma City Dodgers take on the San Antonio Missions for a summer evening of America's favorite pastime and more. The game starts at 6:05, and it's Faith and Family Night. So after the game, you'll get great music from multiple Dove Award-winning rap artist KJ Mike.
More you, really so much less of me.
Plus, a testimony from Oklahoma's own U.S. Senator James Lankford, and a message of hope from evangelist Scott Dawson. Then concluding the evening, a concert by
Jeremy Camp.
I was a dead man walking until I was a man walking with you.
Faith and Family Night, Saturday, July 20th at Chickasaw Bricktown Ballpark. Tickets start at only $9, so get yours today. For tickets and more information, go to safeathomeministries.org. That's safeathomeministries.org.
It's so clean and bland. I'm home.
I didn't think I was bland. Clean, yes. I shower. But bland? Thanks, Marge. And what ran right before that was something I spent some time on yesterday, producing a commercial for an event in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, coming up next month. I just wanted to toss it in. Spent a lot of time on it yesterday, doing various versions. My friends over at SDEA are going to be in Oklahoma City in July doing a baseball event with KJ52 and Jeremy Camp and James Lankford and my friend Scott Dawson. And by the way, if you're in the area, lawn seating starts around $8. And you can actually sit in a real seat for just a few dollars more. You got to check it out. It's going to be a fun day. I've been to several of these things, working them, shooting photos, things like that. And it's a great evening. It really is. All right. Now, let's see. Moving forward with press stupidity. A journalist from Vox, who we've already established can't be trusted, a guy named Aaron Rupar, tried to dunk on President Donald Trump for remarks he made Tuesday about the agriculture industry, but he ended up exposing his own ignorance. Addressing a crowd at a GOP fundraising event in Iowa, Trump at one point spoke about his administration's efforts to bring internet to rural communities. He said, "We secured nearly $1.2 billion to expand rural broadband, which you need very badly. You need very badly. They have not treated the West well with broadband, with anything having to do with the word computer. I look at some of those tractors and they don't even hook up." Commenting on Twitter, Rupart seemed to suggest that Fox Business, which aired Trump's speech live, had cut away from the feed because Trump's remarks were so embarrassing. He said, "Beyond parody, Fox Business cuts away from Trump's speech right after he laments, bizarrely, that tractors can't hook up to the internet." He tweeted that. Well, Rupart was swiftly fact-checked by farmers and conservatives. Senator Joni Ernst, a Republican from Iowa, accused him of being out of touch with non-coastal Americans. She said, "This might be news to folks in New York or D.C., but in Iowa, we know internet-connected farm equipment is critical for precision agriculture, and it's one of the reasons I'm working to improve rural broadband speed and access." Actor Kevin Williams said, "It sounds funny, but yeah, modern farming equipment has the ability to interface with other equipment in the internet, the same as any other industry, or even a thing you're looking at in your hand. It's a $1 trillion industry. Of course they use technology." Conservatives have long accused the media of being biased by its overrepresentation in urban centers such as Washington, D.C. and New York. Meanwhile, experts and commentators have noted the urban-rural divide playing an increasing central role in U.S. and global politics. After the 2016 election, numerous think pieces acknowledged the liberal media bubble as a reason why so many pundits and city dwellers were stunned by Trump's victory. It's absolutely true. This is flyover country. We've talked about this before. And in flyover country, these rubes just don't understand what it means to know anything. But these people don't understand. They just don't understand. Because they see the entire world through their urban filters. They believe that everybody should live the same way they do. They believe that everybody that doesn't is a rube, a redneck, and an uninformed idiot. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm not just talking down on these people. This is how they really see America. Mainstream, middle America. Flyover country. The places they prefer to look at through the window of an airliner on their way to cooler destinations. They're traveling from New York to L.A., from L.A. to New York, and they're flying over that middle of the country where people where people chew on hay and talk to their cows and don't understand what civilization is really like. And what they completely ignore is the fact that all that flyover country, well, a great deal of that flyover country, is producing the food they were served before they got on the plane, the food they will eat when they reach their destination, and in many cases, produces the automobiles they will be driving in or riding in when they get where they're going. If it weren't for flyover country, these people would starve and not know how to get anywhere. That's kind of the base of it. Moving along, you've probably heard by now that Kellyanne Conway has repeatedly broken the law and should be fired. Well, coming from The Blaze, we have this story. It says a federal watchdog agency has accused White House counselor Kellyanne Conway of repeatedly violating the law and says she should be fired over the alleged violations. The U.S. Office of Special Counsel, not to be confused with former Special Counsel Robert Mueller, sent a letter to President Trump on Thursday, telling him Conway has repeatedly violated the Hatch Act during her official media appearances by making statements directed at the success of your re-election campaign or at the failure of candidates for the Democratic Party's nomination for president. In doing so, the special counsel continues, she has used her official authority to advocate for or against declared candidates for partisan political office. End quote. It goes on to detail the allegations further and ultimately calls for Ms. Conway's removal from federal service. The Hatch Act is a 1939 law prohibiting executive branch employees from engaging in some political activities. The letter was signed by Henry Koehner, who was appointed by President Trump. In it, Koehner also scolded the president, saying, quote, Ms. Conway's actions and statements stand in stark contrast to the culture of compliance promised by your White House counsel and undermine your efforts to create and enforce such culture. Evidently, this has been an ongoing discussion between the administration and the federal agency. 2 days prior to Koehner issuing his letter, along with the OSC investigation into the matter, White House counsel Pat Cipollone wrote Koehner in defense of Conway, accusing him of presenting allegations, quote, based on numerous grave legal, factual, and procedural errors, end quote. He called OSC's recommendation of firing Conway as outrageous as it is unprecedented. The Washington Post reported that White House Deputy Press Secretary Stephen Groves responded to the special counsel's actions against Conway on Thursday, saying, quote, "Others of all political views have objected to the OSC's unclear and unevenly applied rules, which have a chilling effect on free speech for all federal employees." He added, "OSC's decisions seem to be influenced by media pressure and liberal organizations, and perhaps OSC should be mindful of its own mandate to act in a fair, impartial, non-political manner and not misinterpret or weaponize the Hatch Act." We're getting a lot of information about this situation with Kellyanne Conway. And I would dare say that if you go back through prior administrations, you will see the same kind of activity, the same kind of speaking to the press. The same things have happened administration after administration after administration. But because we have a leftist press intent on demonizing the President of the United States and anyone and everyone attached to him, we get stories which don't deal with everything in a proper manner. So what we hear is that Kellyanne Conway has broken the law and should be fired. Well, the Hatch Act is something that people threaten to enforce from time to time, but rarely do. And that's because it only gets drug out of the dust when political opposition wants to somehow damage the credibility of their opponents. So what's happening is that the left is using this law, which almost completely never, ever, ever gets used, and pointing fingers at somebody in Trump's administration so that they can give the impression or reinforce the impression that it is corrupt and that it is dishonest and that it is, well, you insert your favorite words here for negativity, because that's what they've been doing for a long time now. Actually, since before he was sworn in, they've been trying to convince us that everybody around him is corrupt, that they're cronies, that he is surrounding himself with people who are criminals, when really, that's not true. And the previous administration was actually really guilty of doing that. And they were really guilty of breaking federal law. But nothing was ever said or done about that because they were all watching out for each other. More after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues.
Places, everyone! It's showtime!
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Good to have you along today. Hope you're having a terrific day. Looking forward to a big weekend. And that before you dive into your weekend, you're going to go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com and sign up for the Daily Perspective newsletter to get the links of the stories that we've talked about today. And every day during the Daily Perspective podcast, you get the links to the stories, and those stories give you other places to jump off to find out more information. And there's always stuff I just won't get to because of the constraints of time. You get the whole stack I bring to the studio every day, not just the stuff that makes it into the show. I think it's a pretty good deal, since it doesn't cost you anything. So get signed up today, dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Go to the right-hand column, fill out the form, acknowledge the email that you get for confirmation, and you're on your way. If you do it, if you're on the live show right now on Facebook Live, if you do it right now, you'll get it before, you'll get today's. The ones I'm actually scrolling through right now on my computer screen, you'll get those show notes today. Stories like this. We've been watching what's happening in Memphis. We know that there's been rioting. We know that there was a a black young man killed by cops. And we know some of the story, but we don't know all of the story. So let's take a look at this story. It's coming to us from the Daily Mail in the UK. Let's dive in. The pregnant girlfriend of a 20-year-old black man who was shot dead by U.S. Marshals during an attempted arrest outside his family's home went into labor as riots broke out in the streets of the working-class Memphis neighborhood where he was killed. Brandon Weber was shot and killed by officers Wednesday night as they tried to arrest him for multiple warrants, including violent felony offenses. Please remember this, violent felony offenses. This occurred outside his home in Frazier in North Memphis. Weber, who has a 2-year-old son, was shot between 16 and 20 times, according to his father, Sonny Weber. Authorities have not confirmed that his felony warrants, what his felony warrants were or how many gunshots were fired. His girlfriend, Alleria Hardwick, who is the mother of his toddler son, was in labor when Weber was killed. They had been expecting a baby girl, but it is not yet clear if she's given birth. She probably has by the time we're talking here. She filmed an emotional Facebook Live video of her crying in her hospital bed after hearing the news of Weber's death. Weber and Hardwick had hosted a baby shower on June 1st at the home where he was killed. Weber, who had a history of arrests on minor drug-related and driving charges, was described as an honors student who graduated from Memphis Central High School in 2017 and was enrolled at the University of Memphis. Public records show that Weber was arrested 5 times. For driving violations and on charges that included possession of drug paraphernalia and marijuana. Shortly before he was shot on Wednesday, Weber posted a live video on Facebook that showed him in a car, rapping and apparently smoking a marijuana cigarette. In the video, he looked out the window and said he saw police. With a laugh, he looked directly into the camera and said the officers would, quote, have to kill me, end quote. The video appeared to have been removed from his Facebook page late yesterday morning. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigations said officers went to his home about 7 p.m. to look for Weber, who had outstanding warrants, including the violent felony offense that occurred on June 3rd. Officers said they saw Weber get into a vehicle and that he then proceeded to ram task force vehicles several times before exiting with a weapon. Marshals then opened fire on Weber. He died at the scene, according to officers. In the hours after his death, friends flooded Weber's Facebook page with messages of love, grief, disbelief, and outrage at the authorities responsible for his death. Quote, he was loving and a very sweet, kind person. That's what Diamond Butler said. She's known Weber since middle school. I just want everybody to know he was a caring person. He took care of his kids. Shocking photos show armed police facing off with an angry crowd as the streets descended into chaos following the fatal shooting, with hundreds of riot gear-clad officers called in to quell the unrest. At least 24 police officers and 2 journalists were injured during the confrontation. 6 officers were taken to hospital, suffering mostly minor injuries. It wasn't clear how many civilians were hurt, but 3 people were arrested. Officers cordoned off several blocks near the scene as people threw rocks and bricks at law enforcement during the tense clash. By 11 p.m., officers had used tear gas, and most of the crowd dispersed. Officers on horseback patrolled the area, and lines of police cars with flashing blue lights were parked along the street. An ambulance could be seen at the outer edge of the scene. A helicopter flew overhead as police cars trickled away. Residential streets remained blocked, and a heavy police presence remained in the area on Thursday morning. In identifying Weber on Twitter early Thursday, Shelby County Commissioner and mayoral candidate Tammy Sawyer said, quote, every life lost should matter, every single one. How many times will this be okay? It cannot continue to be. Memphis police officers were called in to help with crowd control as word of the shooting spread on social media. As more protesters showed up, more Memphis officers and Shelby County Sheriff's deputies arrived at the scene. The situation then escalated. Officers donned protective riot gear as people threw rocks and bricks. Police cars and a nearby fire station were damaged. Police Director Michael Rawlings implored residents to wait until the TBI finishes its investigation before spreading possible misinformation about the shooting. He said, I need everyone to stay calm. While police support the right of people to demonstrate, Rawlings said, we will not allow any acts of violence. 34-year-old student Passion Anderson brought her 13-year-old son to the scene early Thursday. She grew up in Memphis and recently moved back to the Fraser neighborhood, a mostly low to middle income area with modest single family homes and apartments. She said she worried about her son's safety every day in Memphis, which struggles with crime and gang activity. She says, I just want him to see this, know what's going on, to be conscious. I fear for him all the time. Well, she should fear for him in that particular atmosphere, but not from the police. The police were there doing their job. There was a violent felony offense which had occurred just a few days prior. They were there to serve a warrant and take him in. He was high, smoking marijuana, rammed police cars, exited his vehicle with a gun in his hand. And at that point, in a law enforcement officer's career, there is not time to ask what is the right thing to do. There is not time to wonder if he will raise that firearm and point it at you or one of your co-workers and pull the trigger. At that point in time, the training that you have had shifts into gear, and you raise your weapon, and you defend yourself. When someone who has just been using a 2-ton piece of metal to ram the vehicles of your police department, and then steps out of that 2-ton piece of machinery, holding a firearm in his hand, you don't have time to be a weenie and to be woke. The only assumption you can make at that point in time is that this person intends you and your comrades harm, and that around you are also innocent people who could very well be injured. And at that point in time, you do what you've been trained to do, and that is to end the danger. An armed, dangerous, violent felon, even though he was merely 20 years of age, he was still armed, he was dangerous, and he was a wanted felon. And his neighborhood and his mayor are condemning the police for their actions. Is this right? No, it isn't right. When politicians side with criminals, politicians should be removed from office. When politicians speak to the press before everything is researched and all of the facts are known, and they condemn law enforcement without knowing what really happened, they should be ejected from office. When crowds form, throwing rocks and bricks and damaging public property, endangering lives all around them, they should be dealt with swiftly and harshly. And when you don't, you tell them this is okay. Sure, you can pitch a fit. Go ahead, act out. We'll give you some room. Go ahead and burn some businesses down and destroy people's homes. Go ahead and break the windshields and windows out of police cruisers and damage a fire station. Go ahead and hurl objects at the people who are paid to protect your sorry lives from one another. We'll wait. No. They should be dealt with swiftly and harshly. But politicians today are afraid to do that.
Okay, now go. 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 Go.
I think we're ready to go.
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Now you may be thinking, wow, Mark, that was harsh. Let me ask you a question. If anybody you know pitched a raging hissy fit in your home and broke your furniture and your belongings, smashed out your windows because they were unhappy with something that they didn't know all the details about, would you just let them? No, you wouldn't. And the mayor of Memphis, Tennessee, is siding with the people destroying their surroundings. The mayor of Memphis should be pulled from office immediately for siding with people who use violence to express their opinions. There is no place for this in our society, but we're dealing with people here who in the dark of night will destroy the inside of a Huddle House or any other kind of late night eatery because they have a disagreement about something. And so they'll take to the streets and destroy police cars and fire buildings, firehouses, and in places like Baltimore, they'll burn down businesses. This is what we're dealing with. And it happens because it's allowed to happen. I'm not talking about instituting a police state. I'm talking about enforcing the law. That's what I'm talking about. I want to ask the mayor of Memphis, if she has children, would she allow her children to destroy her home because they didn't get the result they wanted on something? If she found out they couldn't go to Disney World, would she let them destroy the interior of her home because they were unhappy? I can only assume she would. Let's go look at her house and see if that's true. Of course it's not true. But when it comes to politics, sanity is flushed down the toilet. It just angers me. Sorry. Not sorry. Let's move along to more media idiocy, shall we? The Mexico deal. Trump's Mexico deal. The media got stuff wrong and right about it. And the Heritage Foundation has a great article by James Carafano that I want to share with you. In spite of all the panic, it doesn't look like the price of guacamole is going to skyrocket anytime soon. I hope all those who stockpiled avocados in anticipation of a U.S.-Mexico trade war throw parties real soon before their stash goes bad. In the wake of a new agreement on immigration, President Trump has indefinitely suspended his threat to slap tariffs on all Mexican imports to the U.S. That's undeniably good news, but there seems to be much confusion about what the deal actually entails. That's because almost none of the stuff peddled by the left-leaning media over the weekend is true. So, let's examine those claims and clear the air. Claim number one, the negotiations yielded nothing new. This is false. The New York Times led the charge here, claiming that everything Mexico agreed to do had been hammered out months ago. But if it were already a done deal, why did Mexico feel the need to rush a high-level delegation to D.C. and plunge into marathon talks with Vice President Pence and other U.S. negotiators? In fact, those intense talks produced two new and extremely important commitments: Mexico's agreement to hit specific, measurable goals and put serious manpower on the task. This creates a framework for grading the extent and effectiveness of Mexico's actions to stem the tide of illegal immigration. While Mexico had previously agreed to implement some elements of the agreement, such as holding some of the illegal immigrants in Mexico while the U.S. processed their cases, the commitment to mobilize 6,000 Mexican National Guard personnel to the Guatemala border is new and most welcome. The National Guard blends military, principally Army and Navy forces, with civilian federal police. This is a relatively new force since February of 2019, and their command and control is still being worked out. their deployment is not only substantively different from anything previously agreed to, but it effectively commits Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador to make control of illegal immigration a national security priority for his country. That, in and of itself, is a very big deal. Claim number two, we have treated a friend unfairly. False. By we, Trump's opponents mean Trump. But Trump isn't the only party responsible for solving the crisis at the border. Congress and Mexico have duties too, and they weren't taking them seriously. Indeed, Congress has exacerbated the problem by refusing to act on numerous proposals to stem the flood of illegal border crossings and meritless refugee claims. Mexico, in turn, used this as an excuse for Mexico not doing more. Quote, if the U.S. Congress shouldn't be bothered, why should Mexico? The fact is, Mexico should care. Transnational criminal activity and mass migration are as big a threat to prosperity and security in Mexico as they are in the United States. The Mexican people get this. That's why the crowd attending a mass rally in Tijuana cheered when López Obrador vowed to comply with the terms of the agreement assumed by his government to contain a surge of Central American migrants seeking to enter the U.S. Claim number three. This deal is a bellwether for a tariff deal with China. False. These are very different situations. The situation with China is far more complex. Yes, tariffs are an issue in both cases, but the trade war with China encompasses a web of issues, ranging from intellectual property theft and cyber espionage to the activities of China's state-owned enterprises and unfair trading practices. Most serious observers believe U.S.-China trade relations are in for a wild ride. Markets and businesses are already starting to diversify their supply chains, so American goods and services aren't dependent on a friendly face in Beijing. The economic tug of war in China could span years, with many ups and downs. Case in point, the White House just announced that Beijing will be hit with more U.S. tariffs if China's President Xi doesn't show up at the G20 meeting in Tokyo to talk trade with Trump. Claim number four. There will be trade wars as far as the eye can see. False. Waging economic warfare through tariffs is injurious to free markets. Free markets are a key American competitive advantage. Americans are capitalists. For us, free markets are a home game. Using tariffs beyond their legitimate and legally defined purposes is wrong. Abrogating the constitutional authorities and responsibilities of Congress is detrimental to good governance. Tariffs are no more able to fix every foreign policy problem than cough syrup is able to ease every health problem. Many Americans supported the president on tariffs because they felt his intentions were good. But they also count on this president to get Washington out of the way so that the economy can grow faster. He did that by cutting taxes, red tape, and excessive regulations. Jobs were created, rate wages rose, and unemployment plummeted. But high tariffs conflict with that all-American economic agenda. Here's betting our president knows that. That he will always put growth in American jobs first and, in the end, will prioritize free markets over tariff wars. And that's the article. On tariffs, I'll say what I've said before. It's a negotiating tool. It's what you bring to the table when people aren't paying attention. As we said earlier in the article, Mexico wasn't taking this seriously. Trump did something to get their attention. The same applies to China. This communist nation is thumbing its nose at international law, is stealing intellectual property, is stealing technology ideas. I don't know if you've done this like I have, but if you shop, do a little international shopping. There are some Chinese sources where you can shop online, and you can buy cell phones that look exactly like iPhones and like Google phones and the like for a fraction of the price. And they perform a lot like their originals. The software, the operating systems are a little different because they're knockoffs. But by and large, the internals are almost identical. Why? Because China is stealing technology from America. And it goes a lot farther than that. So it has to be dealt with. And to do that, we have to play hardball. We have to get their attention. Because if we don't, they'll continue to take advantage of us. And it hurts America in the long run. And that's enough for a week, don't you think? Enjoy your weekend. Let's get back together Monday morning for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.